Plutonium wouldn't implode. It would blow to pieces. Many of the physicists who worked on the Manhattan Project, Oppenheimer, Fermi, Teller, Bethe, later became well known. And yet one of the crucial design characteristics of almost every nuclear weapon built since then was perfected by George Kistchakowsky, a tall, elegant chemist. Born in the Ukraine and raised in an academic family, Kistchakowsky had fought against the Bolsheviks during the Russian Civil War. He later earned a degree at the University of Berlin, emigrated to the United States, and became a professor of chemistry, first at Princeton, then at Harvard. By the mid-1940s, he was America's leading expert on explosives. Creating a perfectly symmetrical shockwave required not just the right combination of explosives, but also the right sizes and shapes. Kistchakowsky and his team at Los Alamos molded explosive charges into three-dimensional lenses, hoping to focus the shockwave like the lens of a camera focuses light. Tons of explosives were routinely detonated in the hillsides of Los Alamos as different lens configurations were tested. Kistchakowsky considered these lenses to be precision devices, not crude explosives. Each weighed between 70 and 100 pounds. As the date of the Trinity test approached, he spent long hours at the lab with a dentist's drill, eliminating the air bubbles in lenses and filling the holes with molten explosives. The slightest imperfection could distort the path of a shockwave. The final design was a sphere composed of 32 shaped charges, 12 pentagons and 20 hexagons. It looked like a gigantic soccer ball and weighed about 5,000 pounds. The shape and composition of the explosive lenses were irrelevant, however, if the lenses failed to detonate at exactly the same time. The shockwave would travel through the device at a speed of 1 millimeter per millionth of a second. If a single lens detonated a few 10 millionths of a second before the others, it could shatter the plutonium without starting a chain reaction. Blasting caps and primacord were the detonators usually employed with conventional explosives, but both proved incapable of setting off 32 charges simultaneously. The physicist Luis Alvarez and his assistant Lawrence Johnston invented a new type of detonator for the job, the exploding bridge wire detonator. It sent a high-voltage current through a thin silver wire inserted into an explosive. The current vaporized the wire, creating a small shockwave, and detonated the explosive. Donald F. Hornig, who was one of the youngest scientists at Los Alamos, devised a contraption, the X unit, that could store 5,600 volts in a bank of capacitors and then send that electricity instantaneously to all the detonators. In theory, the X unit and the exploding bridge wires would set off 32 explosive lenses at once, creating the perfect shockwave and imploding the plutonium core. In reality, these new inventions were unpredictable. Cracked insulation frequently caused the detonators to short circuit. When that happened, they didn't work. And a week before the Trinity test, an X unit fired prematurely during a lightning storm. It had been triggered by static electricity in the air. The misfire suggested that a nuclear weapon could be set off by a lightning bolt. At 3:18 in the afternoon on July 13, 1945, the plutonium core was delivered to a steel tower a couple of miles from the McDonald Ranch House. The tower rose about 100 feet above the desert and resembled an oil rig with a small shed on top. The rest of the nuclear device sat inside a tent at the base of the tower, awaiting completion. At first, the core wouldn't fit inside it. For a few minutes, nobody could understand why, and then the reason became clear. The plutonium was warm, but the housing that it was supposed to enter had been cooled by the shade of the tent. Once the housing warmed, the core easily slid in. At about 4 o'clock, a thunderstorm threatened and the tent started to flap violently in the wind. The small group of scientists left the base of the tower and waited for half an hour at the ranch house until the storm passed. When they returned, Kiszczakowski supervised the placement of the last explosive lenses, and at dusk, the device was bolted shut. The next morning, as it was slowly hoisted to the top of the tower, surplus army mattresses were stacked to a height of 15 feet directly beneath it, in case the cable broke. The nuclear device was an assortment of spheres within spheres. First an outer aluminum casing, then two layers of explosives, then a thin layer of boron and plastic to capture neutrons that might enter from outside the core, then more aluminum, then a tamper of uranium-238 to reflect neutrons that might escape from inside the core, then the ball of plutonium, and finally, at the very center, the golf ball-size neutron initiator, a mixture of beryllium and polonium that would flood the device with neutrons, like a nuclear fuse when the shock wave from the lenses struck. Inside the metal shed atop the tower, the detonators were installed by hand, two for every explosive lens linked to a pair of X units. The device now looked like something concocted in a mad scientist's laboratory, a 6-foot-tall aluminum globe with a pair of large boxes, the X units attached to it, and 32 thick electrical cables leaving each box, winding around the sphere and entering evenly spaced holes on its surface. The Trinity test was scheduled for 4 in the morning on July 16th, but forecasters predicted bad weather. Going ahead with the test could prove disastrous. In addition to the threat of lightning, high winds and rain could carry radioactive fallout as far as Amarillo, Texas, 300 miles away. Postponing the test had other drawbacks. The device could be damaged by the rain, and President Harry S. Truman was in Potsdam, Germany, preparing to meet with Winston Churchill, the British Prime Minister, and Joseph Stalin, the General Secretary of the Soviet Union's Communist Party. Nazi Germany had recently been defeated, and Truman was about to demand an unconditional surrender from the Japanese. Having an atomic bomb would make it easier to issue that demand. General Groves argued that the test should go forward as planned, and Oppenheimer agreed. Both men became increasingly nervous on the evening of the 15th, not only about the weather, but also about the risk of sabotage. And so Donald Hornig was instructed to babysit the bomb. At 9 p.m., Hornig climbed to the top of the 100-foot tower as rain began to fall. He brought a collection of